it is gone! A two-run home run for Rhys Hoskins into the second deck for Bryce Harper. Swing and a miss, he got him! And Aaron Nola leads two. Segura on the run, reaches up and makes the grab!
Swing and a miss, struck him out!
Now batting for the Phillies, John Stolness.
Hey there, podcast pals, and welcome back to another edition of Hittin' Season. This is episode number 328. I'm John Stolness from The Good Fight. You can follow me on Twitter at John Stolness. Coming up, we're going to talk about the Phillies news conference from Friday and the complete crap show that it was. Not a lot of good feelings about this baseball team after watching the Three Horsemen discuss what was going on with the Gabe Kapler firing, but we're going to get to that coming up here in just a few minutes. Also, some Phillies managerial interview news to share with you coming up here in the next few minutes as well. And joining me, as they do every Sunday night, are Justin Clue and Liz Rocher. Justin, you know, of course, from Fangraphs and Baseball Prospectus. You can follow him on Twitter at Justin_Clue. Hi, Justin.
Hi, I have a question. So in the press conference that we will get to momentarily, it was mentioned by John Middleton that the people who came up to him on the street were saying both positive and negative things about Gabe Kapler in equal measure. My question is, do people come up to John Middleton on the street? How is that allowed? Why are they not getting body slammed by an escort? Or like, is this just like in their...
some kind of security guard, yeah.
Just outside of the city, obviously, in a gated community or something. But I don't know. It seemed like the image of people approaching John Middleton on the street, A, recognizing him, B, being able to approach. Are they just yelling from across the street? I don't know. That image kind of struck out to me as like, is that really happening? Or is it just not happening in the way that I'm like most immediately imagining it?
Justin, how easily you forget. Remember the construction worker that yelled at Manny Machado recently?
Stupid.
This is a special city. These are special people in a special place.
I hope
place.
It was literally the same guy.
Yeah, because I was you're right. I would never go up to somebody like that and just yell, give my unfiltered opinion on Gabe Kapler for no reason. Gabe, what are you doing? You know, and half of the people saying
exactly what they've done.
And then to think that half of those people are saying Kapler's doing an awesome job. Stay the course. You know?
He's like opening a little notebook and making a little tally. Like, okay, that's one for Kapler, one against. All right.
Phil from the Northeast says keep Gabe. Got it. All right.
I'm guessing it's just his country club or
that's way more.
Or as Mr. Middleton is cruising around Bull's Barbecue and getting some crab fries during the fifth inning.
A man of the people. I was researching a piece for Baseball Prospectus on managers, and there was a one and done manager for the Cubs. I think in 1991, maybe Tom Treblehorn, and like multiple times. He got just like cornered on the street by mobs of fans demanding answers for, baseball things. And he was asked about this later by a reporter. He multiple times just every time kind of embraced it and just tried to answer everybody's questions.
That's amazing.
Wow. But I mean, it's insane. Especially
how has
that
not happened here?
Well, especially after hearing that Gabe Kapler had considered the idea of holding town halls with fans.
Right. Like
that's the best thing I've ever heard.
Gosh. Sounds like they happen whether you scheduled them or not.
In no way was he a fit for this place.
I was at
it
the
really
Wegmans.
Is true
and
because
I was, what happened?
I was in the express aisle at Wegmans. And
a town hall broke out. I don't know. I wasn't expecting it, but there it was.
Stuck there for 2.5 hours.
I in no world can I imagine a town hall meeting like that going well.
No, not towards the end of the tenure here. Nope.
No, it's just it's an admirable idea, but man, he just
admirable idea. It just kind of showed
how he was never going to work here. He was just never going to work here. This just wasn't right.
Well, that voice you hear is Liz Rocher from Yahoo Sports, and again, you can follow Liz on Twitter at Liz Rocher. Hi, Liz.
Hello. Are we all ready? Do we have oxygen? Are we ready to do this?
Yeah, we've rolled up our sleeves, folks. This could be a long one here today. We're not sure how long we're going to go. We're going to go until we've exhausted ourselves. But
the press conference itself was an hour.
Yeah, So, I mean, to analyze something like that, I mean, what's the over-under on that? So we're going to get into that more here in just a minute, but let's move this story forward, as we say in the news business, and let's talk about the latest information that's coming down the pike, and that is, of course, the Phillies' managerial interviews. We found out on Sunday afternoon via a series of tweets. Apparently, the floodgates opened, and somebody inside the Phillies was spilling the beans on who they were going to talk to coming up this week. Because
that person is John Middleton.
Probably everyone. John Middleton, yeah.
His name
I think
is John
we learned.
Middleton.
Yep, it's probably John Middleton.
Who
so
else
we
would
found
have that information.
No, it was my friend Ron Chittleton, of course.
Ron Middleton. Yes.
So we found out that the Phillies are going to interview Buck Showalter. They're going to do that on Monday in New York. Jim Salisbury reports the Phillies are also going to talk to Joe Girardi while they're in New York City because Joe lives in there. Lives in that city. That sounded less formal to me than like the Buck Showalter interview, but who the hell knows? And then also, I think it was the Chicago Tribune was reporting that the Phillies are going to talk to Bryce Harper's former manager with the Nationals, Dusty Baker, later this week. So let's talk about these three. You talk about polar opposites from Gabe Kapler, especially as far as experience is concerned. I think Showalter and Girardi are at the top of most people's lists of people to talk to. I think different people have them 1, 2, or there might be somebody else in the top two. But one of these two guys is these names certainly make a lot of sense. I think the name that I'm not sure makes as much sense, although I would not be opposed to it at all, is Dusty Baker, simply because Dusty Baker is 70 years old. He's never been, you know, deeply into the analytics, although I don't know how much Buck Showalter has been either. Seems to me they are really prioritizing experience here with these three guys more so than anything else.
Yeah, I mean, I would be surprised if they went the rookie manager route this time again. I guess the question becomes, what is, like you were saying, what is the primary difference between these candidates? Because we all know if they're leaning towards experience, these are the guys who are available. But they did talk about how they knew that among the available managers who have experience, they're also aware of where they as a team stand for those managers. Now, they didn't say where they stood, but I don't know. I mean, do you think... Do you think the Phillies are anybody's top choice before or after that press conference?
I mean, I think by merely recognizing, just even saying the words, you know, wherever it is that we may stand, they're aware. I don't think they're anybody's top choice.
They're not, right?
No.
That's what that meant.
Well, here's the deal.
I think this press conference probably concerned the... I think Dusty Baker, who hasn't had a managerial job in a couple of years, is concerned about this. He
right.
might not want to step back into this... whatever it is.
Like if you're Dusty Baker and you're waiting for the right time to step back into managing at 70 years old, this team would have to make a hell of a sales pitch, I think, following everything that's happened thus far to make it seem like this is worth it at 70 years old.
See, I come at it from a different angle. Dusty Baker's 70. He can't wait a whole lot longer. He can't wait for that perfect opportunity. My man is 70 years old. I know he's a cool guy and, you know, he's a pretty youthful 70, but 70 is 70, and you know he can't wait a year. He can't wait 2 years necessarily for the next plum job to come around. And I really don't think they would be leaking that they were going to be meeting with these guys if they didn't think that they could get one of
these.
Oh,
I think
they
have a chance of getting all three of them.
And I think money's going to talk here, is what I'm saying. I think John Middleton is going to throw a ton of money at the guy that they really want.
Those are his decisions to make. Everybody knows now.
I'm just saying there are 8 jobs available, and Dusty Baker doesn't have to take any of them. And honestly, looking over a lot of them, not a lot of them are ideal conditions. You know, the best jobs, the best managing jobs in baseball right now are taken.
Yeah.
So
they're playing in the league championship series
right now.
Those are the best jobs in baseball.
So I'm saying if we're looking at this, like, yeah, Dusty Baker's only got, you know, the clock's ticking. At the same time, maybe no managing job is worth it. I don't think there's any leverage that anybody has over him. I think it's cool the Phillies are going to talk to him. I think he'd be definitely somebody worth giving a shot. But man, it just seems like based on what the reason we're all talking the way we're talking about the Phillies right now. Yeah, can you imagine just stepping in a prominent role and taking the job that John Middleton in this press conference described as saying, like, it's part of the game that this job, I'm paraphrasing here, it's just part of the game that the manager's job gets blamed for everything in the short term, while the front office, who is responsible for hiring him and giving him the players he has to work with, gets to think about the long term. I mean, it just seems like it was characterized in that statement as a bit of a thankless position by its very nature. And that sort of job for any of these guys has to be worth it. And there's 8 of those jobs available. So, I mean, the Phillies definitely aren't the most appealing, I would say, as we talked about last week. But at the same time, yeah, I think, John, you're right. They wouldn't be talking to these guys if they didn't think they had a shot at them. And I think they have a shot at all 3 of them. They just, you know, it's comical to think that, like, they're being ranked as well by these guys. And they're all like, oh, yeah, Phillies, goddamn.
let me ask you a question here. Last week when we ranked the Phillies in terms of the open managerial jobs, I think we did that on Thursday right after the announcement was made. We got together Thursday night and we ranked where the Phillies were among the 8 managerial jobs. I think I came in as putting them at number 4. I think, Justin, that was about where we all had them. Do you move them down at all after? And we're going to get into the details of the news conference in just a second. But after the news conference, do you move them down the list at all? Do you move them below the Giants? Do you move them below the Angels or something like that? Do you move them down at all? I kind of probably still have them where I initially did.
Yeah, I just think there's probably more trepidation. I mean, it's just going to take a little bit more than it would have. I mean, I think the only guy it might not would be Buck Showalter, who knows both of these guys. Mm-hmm. He knows Klentak. I mean, he knows Klentak. He knows McPhail. They all work together, which is really kind of frustrating, because why are you all just hiring the same guys that you hired back at that other place where you were all presumably fired or left for better opportunities? So, yeah, I mean, I wouldn't be upset at Buck Showalter at all, but it's also like, I'm glad you all are comfortable. How many more Orioles people are you going to bring in from the last decade where they ended up being very disappointing and dysfunctional?
I'll tell you one thing about moving them up or below or the Giants. We got a great look at this press conference at the people the manager would be working with. And you can base your own opinion on that performance as you will if you're a prospective manager. In San Francisco, they don't have a general manager. They're working out who their general manager and managing partner are going to be. So you got a fresh start with somebody who presumably is being picked to work with you specifically. So that might be an appeal to somebody who's thinking about coming back in the game.
Well, we're going to get to the Giants in just a second because they are interviewing Gabe Kapler. Well, I'll talk about it now. They are interviewing Gabe Kapler. I was going to double back on something with the 3 managers the Phillies are going to talk to. But that kind of what you were just mentioning with the Giants leads right into the fact that they are going to talk to Gabe Kapler about their open position next week. And they have a very strong team president there. I mean, the Giants, unlike the Phillies and Andy McPhail, have a team president who actually is involved in the baseball operations department. He's
accepting this now. This is the way it is. Yeah.
If this is how you're going to operate, but I mean, he's the guy that calls the shots in the baseball ops department. And Zaidi, is that his last name?
Farhan Zaidi. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. He's the guy who worked with Kapler in Los Angeles. And to me, this is the perfect spot for Gabe Kapler. The more I think about it, this team's not going to be ready to win for 2 or 3 years. So he can learn while they're gathering talent and while they're building a talent base there. So if there's any growing pains left for Kapler, and there clearly are, he can be bad at different spots while the team is bad. And hopefully they learn together. And the other part is, All that California speak, the laid back stuff, the way he talks about his players, the way he handles a clubhouse, that's gonna fit in perfectly with that fan base down there, out there in San Francisco. So I think of all the places in Major League Baseball, this feels like the absolute perfect fit for Gabe Kapler.
It's hard to disagree. Mm-hmm. It's hard to disagree with that. I mean, all the reasons you just said are perfect. I'm just like, why wasn't he there the whole time? Oh, because Bruce Bochy was there.
Right.
So, you know, maybe this is the right fit for him. And if it is, I wish him the best of luck. He was not the right fit for us. We were not looking for a manager who needed a lot of growth. We needed someone who could whip the lineup into shape. And hopefully that's what we'll get. I mean, that's just it's a very simplistic way to put it, but that's kind of...
Yeah, but that's so true, though. You know, I don't know if a lot of people are thinking about that, Gabe Kapler was brought in at the time when the Phillies were supposed to be turning the corner, and he had no managing experience on the major league level, and they gave him a team that was supposed to be better and looked good, and then they gave him a team full of superstar power and, you know, known entities, and Yeah, and it wasn't supposed to be a right at the Phillies being at the end of what was supposed to be their growth process. They brought in a guy who still needed to learn.
Yeah,
and that is the definition of not a great fit.
So, looking at the three guys the Phillies are bringing in, Baker, Showalter, and Girardi, one of the things that I took away from that news conference was how important it's going to be for a manager, a really strong manager, to come in here, because this team needs a sense of direction, and all three of these guys, I think, would fit the bill. With all three of these guys, you'd know who's in charge. I mean, especially with the field op stuff. I mean, John Middleton's always going to be in charge, but as far as decision making with stuff on the field, Baker, Showalter, and Girardi would be in charge here, and that's what this team really needs. Do you guys have a preference? Is there one of these three guys you like more than the other, or is there one of these three guys that you absolutely would not like to see as the next manager of the Phillies? Just let me start with you.
You know, I guess I lean towards Buck. I mean, it's so difficult to define what it is a manager is supposed to be doing or can do well to improve their team. Like, we're going to see that if Gabe Kapler goes to San Francisco and does a good job with the Giants. It's going to be like, what is he supposed to do? Well, it's a different job. You know, it was a job in Philadelphia to do one thing, and it'll be a job based on the reasons we just said. It'll be a different job in San Francisco if he should get it. So I find it hard to difficult to say exactly why I've leaned towards Buck, and it's probably just because I've watched more teams that he was managing, and it's not that I am deeply familiar with his style. It's more that he came into a situation in Baltimore that is, you know, they didn't have the best reputation. And he was sort of viewed as this stabilizing force, I think. This almost like dad coming home kind of thing. And they had a young team that was deeply unproven, and like they never went on to win the World Series. But my dad and I watched a lot of real, real bad Orioles teams when I was growing up. And suddenly this was a team that, we're 5 years removed from that ALCS with the Royals and Orioles.
Ooh.
So,
golly,
like,
did they really play in an ALCS against each other? My goodness, I forgot. You're right.
Those were the days.
So, like, that was a team that, you know, Adam Jones and Brian Roberts was an afterthought at that point. He had missed a lot of time by then. But, you know, Manny Machado, obviously. So, like, there was managing a lot of star power and young talent, and they played for him and they liked him and he became a part of the community and everything. You know, it was exactly the kind of thing I think Gabe Kapler viewed himself doing here. The kind of thing he tried to do. So I kind of lean towards Buck simply because I've seen more of him. But you know, reputationally, I would take any of these guys, frankly.
How about you, Liz?
I lean towards Girardi just because I am more familiar with him in general. But also I would take any of these guys. But I also think that's really dangerous because the only template we have right now is not Gabe.
Yeah. No, that's true.
We have a template right now that's just, we do not want a Gabe Kapler-like manager. And that runs the spectrum of what a manager could be. But right now, we're focused on the three most not Kapler-like guys you can be. I want to find out what other names they're going to interview. Because I want to know their commitment to being serious about being thorough about the market. Because as much as I like those guys, is there a better candidate out there? There could be. I mean, John Middleton expressed a willingness in the press conference, to look at a lot of different managers that fit a certain profile that he would help define.
Yeah, to find the next Craig Counsell, he kept saying.
Right.
He said that, but, you know, I don't know if I believe him.
You know what's interesting?
I want to look at the other managers that they ask, because otherwise we're just doing the opposite of what we did before, which is not necessarily an improvement of the process.
That's very true. I would say the one thing that all three of these selections have in common, well, not the one thing, but one thing that they do all have in common is the word obvious when it comes to the choice. Like, who has managed and is available? Well, these three guys. And it turns out that you know, none of them are immediately despisable for any reason. They've all had their share of success, and they'd all be probably good at managing the Phillies right now for reasons, and you know, maybe they wouldn't be for other reasons. But they've proven that they know how to win in the major leagues. I don't want to lean too far into this and say, like, we need somebody who's unproven. You know, a real outsider who's never managed before, who's going to come in and really make the team hit. Because, you know, I would like to avoid something that extreme. But, Liz, you're right. Just considering someone outside of these three choices, I'd love to know who's on that list. You know, obviously if they're leaning towards experience, it's probably going to be more people we are at least aware of, but there are other options out there, you would imagine, because those aren't the only three guys who've managed Major League Baseball teams before who are not currently managing Major League Baseball teams.
You know, I'm trying to think about it, and I'm looking over the list of Phillies managers that over the years. I don't think the Phillies have ever hired a manager with the kind of pedigree that we're talking about when we talk about Girardi or Showalter or Baker. I don't think they've ever hired a manager that had taken another team to a World Series first. I'm just going to go back here and read some of these names of former Phillies managers. Kapler, Pete Maccannon, Ryan Sandberg, Charlie Manuel, Gary Varsho. Remember? Oh, they didn't hire him. He managed one game. Larry Boa, Terry Francona, Jim Fregosi maybe was the most accomplished, but he hadn't won anything really before he came to Philadelphia. Nick Leyva, Lee Elia, John Felsky, and then you had like Pat Corrales, Dallas Green, Danny Ozark, Frank Lucchesi. We're going back to 1969 now. George Myatt, Bob Skinner, Gene Mauch. Gene Mauch didn't have success before he came to Philadelphia. I mean, so
nope.
I don't think they...
Oh, Gene Mauch, one of my faves.
I know.
He's my favorite.
I do not think they have ever hired a manager with any kind of pedigree before. You know what I mean? Like this, if they go and get a Showalter, if they go and get a Girardi, if they go and get a Dusty Baker, it will be the first time this franchise has ever hired a manager like that. And I don't know what that means exactly.
Yeah, okay. I'm so glad you said that, because in my head I'm thinking when one of those guys is available, it usually means he was
they
fired.
They don't get him. Like the Jim, well, the remember the Jim Leland pursuit? Instead, they didn't get Jim Leland. They got Charlie Manuel, and that worked out great. It ended up working out exactly in the Phillies' favor that time. But when they go after big fish managers, they've never landed one before. But I don't think they've ever wanted to spend big money on managers. And now I think they realize that that's something that they want to do. But I can't imagine the old school Phillies, you know, making their manager the highest paid manager in baseball. It was not something this team would have ever done.
I would say the reason for that is this team does not historically have a lot of long stretches of success. And when they've had their stretches of success, they've obviously kept the manager in that time. They've been looking for managers at periods when they are on the downturn, but this has been a team that's existed since 1883, as we know. It is not historically a highly coveted position, I would say.
True. Very true. Very true. And I guess that's true of most teams. When you're looking for a manager, you're bad most
of the
time.
But even if you're like the Yankees lost 100 games last season, you're going to get a line of pretty impressive resumes to manage the Yankees.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's true. I just thought it was interesting. The Phillies, if they land one of these guys, they'll be doing something they've never really done before.
Yeah, absolutely.
I don't know how much it means, but, you know, I just thought it was interesting.
Ryan Sandberg managed the Iowa Cubs, all right?
That's right.
So just hang on to your hat.
Yeah.
Man, the Phillies are so good at evaluating talent.
That's true. Well, let's get into the news conference. We're going to do that after we take a quick break. We'll pay some bills, and then we'll get into...
Get ready, folks.
We'll get into this news conference. Strap in. That's up next here on Hittin' Season. And we're back on Hittin' Season. So, here we go. Phillies news conference from Friday. And, you know, I think we should talk about the optics of this first, because that to me was the most glaring. I mean, we wanted to get an explanation, and really the explanation that we got as to why this took so long was John Middleton took his time. So, I mean, that's really all we got. He went and he flew out. He wanted to have face-to-face meetings with everybody that he talked to. You know, there was the conversation that it was John Middleton believed that Kapler should have been fired. He had concerns back in July. They had conversations about it throughout the course of the second half. Matt Klentak was pushing back on that. Andy McPhail was in the corner of the room eating a pie. You know, so you had Matt Klentak and you had John Middleton who were... I don't know why. I just popped into my head. I had the idea
He's
of little
not
Jack
using
Horner.
A fork in my
no,
head.
No, not
I'm
using
sorry.
A
That's
fork.
That's why
just,
it's even yeah. funnier.
It's like a nursery rhyme or something. I have
yeah, little
in my
Jack
head.
Horner
yes,
sitting in a corner
exactly.
eating
Thank
his.
You.
Andy yeah. went away on this. I don't know. Shine him, whatever.
We just sell these this year to have a pie stand.
So you had basically Middleton versus Klentak here, and you know Middleton owns the team, so he won. But they went about explaining, and it was really bizarre. And here's the optics started crazy right from the jump. You had Andy McPhail explaining why it took John Middleton so long.
Thank
oh, I wrote
with
that
John
down.
Middleton
I
sitting right
down.
Next to him. Like
so weird.
Like
was,
this is
like
my
a bugler. Yeah.
Like he wasn't that involved. I'm just like this. Who? Why are you doing this?
Like John Middleton seemed to say, well, we got to give Andy something to say here. So why don't we let him make the opening statement telling everybody what I did while I sit and watch him. And then, okay, let's open it up to questions. Like there was like, it was almost like, you know, you have a handler. It was almost like Andy McPhail was his PR guy. It was right from the start. It was bizarre.
I mean, Middleton was struggling. He flubbed a lot of lines in that press conference, so maybe he just wasn't feeling particularly like on it that day.
Really?
Verbally.
Because he spoke a lot for right. a guy who wasn't feeling it. I think this was just you're the team president. This is what you should be doing. So here's what we're going to have you do. I really think that was it. Because I'm going to do this a couple of times when we're talking about this. Think back to the Charlie Manuel firing press conference. Who did the bulk of the talking?
I really don't remember.
That was Ruben Amaro. Ruben Amaro did the bulk of the talking.
Mm-hmm. And where was Ruben Amaro in this press conference? I see what you're saying. Yeah, exactly.
No,
I blame him.
It was the general manager doing the bulk of the talking. He didn't have to be poked and prodded with, you know, sharpened sticks to say something. Mm-hmm. It was
how many
his
times
job.
How many times did Matt Klentak apologize to John Middleton for interrupting him when he actually didn't interrupt him?
Oh, so many.
Like, I mean, it was every time Matt Klentak started to speak, he'd get half a sentence. I was like, I'm sorry to interrupt you. You know, John was like, no, I didn't say anything, man. Just talk.
So much deference. It was so strange.
I liked when they got asked a question and Middleton looked at Matt Klentak and said, like, oh, do you want to take that? And Matt Klentak just went, oh, I don't know who he's talking to. And John Middleton answered the question.
Oh, I thought that was a bitchy response to whoever it was who had asked the question hadn't said who he was talking to.
Oh, I mean, whether it was or it was Jim literally not knowing, it was hilarious either way.
I mean, I just don't understand how they screwed this up so badly. They scheduled this news conference for a full day after they sent out the release saying that Kapler was going to be fired. They had longer than 24 hours, but let's just say they didn't know until Thursday afternoon that they were going to fire Gabe Kapler. They still had 24 hours to have a PR guy or a PR person go in there.
Their in-house PR people
run
that
through
they
the
hire.
Questions. Here are the questions you're going to get.
Yes. Where's Bonnie?
So one of two things happened. The PR department royally screwed this up, or these three guys just decided to go rogue and throw out talking points or whatever. But for whatever they did, it looked so bad, and the confidence was shaken so much. Glenn Mack now from WIP put out a poll, and at that time I looked at it, there were about 1,000 responses, and basically
there were over 2,000 when I saw it.
Yeah, I forget exactly
and
how he phrased
it. It was just as skewed as you're about to say it.
Yeah, I forget Can't exactly wait. How he phrased it, but it was something along the lines of, "What is your confidence level in the Phillies after this news conference?" Have you lost confidence? Like 95% of the people who responded had zero confidence in the Phillies front office after this news conference. Like I got to look it up because it was a crazy number. I got to look at the exact wording. But I mean, how did they screw this up so bad, Liz? It's crazy that they did not take the time to actually get this right.
I don't think the PR department is involved at all. I don't think they're in the communications. I don't think they're involved in this stuff at all. They're involved in that, hey, we need a couple of tablecloths and some microphones. I really don't think they have anything to do with the Phillies management, front office, and how they come off to the world. And so I think that at least explains that. My question was, how did these three captains of industry not take 5 minutes before, or maybe even 10, and say, well, these are the questions we're likely to get. Do we want to talk about anything?
Yeah.
I mean, even individually, these men who are at the top of their profession didn't seem to take any time to imagine what questions they might be asked from a beat writer corps that has been increasingly frustrated with them as the season has gone on, visibly, and it spilled out all over the place in that press conference. The beat writers were on it. They did not want to let anything go, and it showed in every single thing that they wrote. Matt Gelb is so angry. He is at his best when he is so angry at the Phillies. His stuff has been fantastic over the past season because he has hated the Phillies, I think, so much.
This press conference was like ringing a dinner bell for that press corps.
It's beautiful.
And I've been DMing one particular beat writer for most of the season, and he's basically just been decrying the lack of a personal touch with this. Like, they're just so out of touch. This, and you could see it in the news conference with these three guys. They're out of touch with each other, and that's what it was. I mean, you're trying to, on one hand, and this was a constant theme throughout the news conference, they kept trying to make it sound like Matt Klentak was still in charge. You know, he's going to run this thing. You know, Andy McPhail was saying it's, you know, the relationship between a GM and the manager, they have to be simpatico. So that's why we're really counting on Matt to spearhead this thing. He said, I don't think there's a relationship in a baseball organization more important than a manager and a GM. If those two aren't simpatico, you really have issues. You couldn't have had a GM and a manager more simpatico than Matt Klentak and Gabe Kapler, and you fired Gabe Kapler against Matt Klentak's wishes, so now you're going to have him go out and start the search? There's no way. There's no way that Gabe Kapler, that wasn't Matt Klentak's hire. And there is now no way that this next hire is going to be Matt Klentak's
Imagine
hire.
The press conference of Matt Klentak introducing Buck Showalter and being like, this is the guy. You know, yeah, did our owner turn on me about Gabe Kapler a year and a half into his tenure here? And like, that was my signature hire and the guy I wanted to be the manager while I was here? Yes, absolutely. But don't worry, now I know it's this guy. Buck Showalter, definitely buy this. It's kind of difficult to believe. And like, they clearly, John Middleton's going to swoop down and make any decision he wants. That's obviously going to happen
a number of times.
But like, they also wanted to play up the idea that like, oh hey, look, when we're designing the roster, it's a room full of 30 people. And Matt Klentak said before, oh hey, look, this was a collaborative thing. You know, yeah,
they tried to blame the coaches for the roster for the roster construction. They you know, putting it all on, you know, that we get all these evaluations from the coaches. Who do they want? Who do they not want? They totally tried to throw it on the coaching staff. Most of the coaching staff, of which they're trying to keep, by the way.
At one point,
I'm sorry to interrupt you, Jasmine. Yeah.
John Middleton actually said in one of his blathering descriptions that they talk to the coaches about the money they're going to spend on players and whether they think they'll be worth it and whether you can give up certain guys for other guys and what you would do with the roster. And I'm like, I'm sure some of those questions are asked. I don't think there's any team where coaches are being asked about money. That's just unrealistic. And as soon as I heard that, I'm just like, he's making most of this up. He can't. As soon as I heard that, I'm just like, how much of this is true? So little of it has to be true. If I were a coach, why would you want to go back to that?
He kind of came into this. I mean, you talk about poor optics. I mean, Middleton came into this trying to like nurse off of McPhail's like sort of, I want to say, undeserved swagger almost. Like, coming in like, don't worry, I have everything I need to know to answer these questions. And when Howard Eskin asked a question, obviously they went right on the like defensive. Like, they wanted to be able to, okay, we got to smack Howard down.
It was a great question. It was a great question. It's a ballsy question.
They didn't answer it at all.
It sucks that when I say how great a job the Phillies press did, I have to include Howard Eskin this time, but you have to. Which makes sense, obviously, because he's never better than when there's something that like everyone actually is mad about, because he's always
angry.
He's always going to be mad about something. And most of the time it's just like, shut up. But this time it was like, yeah, we're all mad about this. So we actually do want to get to the bottom of this. So great job, everybody, again. But yeah, that moment of like he asked his question, and they kind of knew that for just performance sake, they had to like come back hard at him. And McPhail, Middleton kind of like, oh, you answer, are you going to? And then Middleton's like, I can answer this, blah, blah, blah. And then gets on his phone while Eskin's answering, following up, trying to look
I'm
up
sorry.
Stats and everything.
That was such a dick move. My God.
And then, I mean, this is what I know. We're pretty much just talking about whatever at this point. But like, these three guys are talking about. He starts talking about the fourth best second half bullpen ERA in that moment.
My jaw was on the floor.
That's great, man. But look, they're not in the playoffs, and they could have been. So by now, what do you want from me?
And later on, both Middleton and McPhail said multiple times, "We're not going to go for it and spend big money in the at the trade deadline. Trade big players if we're only trying for the second wild card." Yeah. Like if. You don't get to do both things. You don't get to be like, well, we had the fourth best bullpen ERA after the trade deadline.
We increased by the most WAR in baseball.
I'm just like, none of this makes any sense together. Like, it's obvious that John Middleton just makes the decisions he wants to make and pretends to include everybody in some kind of weird play. Like, the amount of collaboration they're talking about, I have no gauge, but it feels like they're really kind of overly collaborative in
yes.
that no one person with the right baseball skills has the power to make any decision themselves.
Mm-hmm. No, and he keeps talking. He mentioned that he was the CEO like a dozen times in this news conference.
He makes a big decision. In no way, yeah. John, was he handed any job by his father, a rich dude.
I liked how he took 3 to 4 minutes to explain what a decision is.
Well, that's part of the 10. That was part of the 10-minute answer that he mm-hmm. gave to Kevin Cooney's question, asking whether or not he still had confidence and faith in his baseball ops people. When it takes you 10 minutes to answer that question, the answer is no. That's the problem here.
It's 10
like,
minutes of our
he
lives
says, like,
we're not getting back.
Nobody bats 1,000 in hiring decisions.
Love
I haven't.
That.
So it's early in his career, but I would also point out he's talking about Klintak, made lots and lots of really good decisions too. No, I think what this should be is a learning experience, candidly, with Matt Klintak sitting right next to him. My little Matty here, he's learned a lot this year. This is going to be a good learning. That's what it looked like. And Matt Klintak looked embarrassed sitting next to him because he should have been embarrassed sitting next to him with that kind of a demeaning answer. You know, I mean, it was so overly emasculating. And Middleton went about trying to say it's not emasculating to challenge people, you know, with decision making processes like running a tobacco company is the same thing as running a Major League Baseball team.
Unbelievable. The only way he can say that is because he's never, ever been in a position where someone has been able to big time him and make a decision that he had the authority to make. He's always been at the top. The man is a cigar magnet. His siblings have been fighting with him for control of their money. This is not a guy who's had anyone tell him he can't make a decision for a really long time. So for him to say, of course it's not emasculating, how do you know?
Well,
it absolutely is.
Why do they want us to think so badly that this is a community decision or that everything is decided with a group input? Like, what does that gain us?
I think they want to what they're trying to do is not lay everything at the feet of Matt Klintak here, because they're trying to justify having not fired Matt Klintak along with Gabe Kapler. But the rationale that they're using
talk
and just
about at all.
Well, I mean, yeah, I mean, it's that. Well, that's the thing is like their very presence, the very body language, the very way they went about this was their way of saying, we don't really have a good answer why we decided to keep Matt Klintak and Andy McPhail and fire Gabe Kapler. Yeah, I thought the most honest part of the entire news conference came after Matt Breen asked his question, when he said, you know, the front office, you know, McPhail talked about, you know, not trading a lot of capital, not going harder at the trade deadline for the iffiness of going after a second wild card. But on one hand, you're saying that you're not going to go, you're going to play the long game, and that it's not worth it to be aggressive at the deadline for a long shot. But then the manager is expected to make the playoffs and gets fired when he doesn't. And Middleton cuts him off and basically says, that's the nature of the business. It goes with the territory. Yep. If a manager can't handle it, then he shouldn't be the manager. Like, what is going on here? I mean, I was fine with Gabe Kapler being relieved of his duties because, like we said, we don't think he was the right man for the right job for this particular team. But you can't also, on the one hand, say, well, you know, we're not going to go hard here. You know, we're not going to be aggressive here. But we expect the manager to win. You know, that was another one of those moments where it was completely tone deaf. Nobody thought about how to answer that question. Middleton just blurted it out. Like, I'm so fed up with answering questions like this. It's like, I'm just, you know, we fired the manager. It's the manager's fault. We're just going to go with it now. I mean, that part made me a little angry, to be honest with you. And that's the first time I felt real sympathy for Gabe Kapler during that news conference.
How does that look for a prospective manager watching that, thinking like, oh, that's going to be my responsibility coming in, to be blamed for reasons that are never really clear, but are definitely different from the way everyone else receives blame in this organization?
So what other aspects of this news conference did you guys find interesting? I've been kind of going off and ticking off the things that I found the most agita-inducing. But Liz, was there anything else from this news? I mean, there's a million things we could point to, but what else particularly struck you? What was a big take? What was the big takeaway you had from this?
Well, Middleton's defensiveness throughout, over-explaining his involvement in every decision, defending why he would be involved. Like, there are millions and millions of dollars. There is no company in the world where, you know, anyone but the CEO would make that decision. Like, we get it. Like, you can stop. We heard you during your first 10-minute answer. Like, his defensiveness was really obvious.
And off-putting.
Yes. And, I mean, I don't know why. And I started thinking about the previous man in his position, which was David Montgomery, sort of. You know, once David Montgomery departed, the structure at the top changed a little bit because David Montgomery, I believe, is managing partner and team president. Mm-hmm. And so he was sort of these two in one. He was a baseball man, but he was also a businessman. John Middleton is only one of those, which is why he ostensibly hired other people to help him. But looking back, Ruben Amaro was the face of this team, not David Montgomery.
Yeah.
And I was thinking back again to the Ryan Howard extension and how many of us blamed Ruben Amaro for that. And I've always been of the mind that I'm not really sure it was him who wanted that. Because that was a lot of money for him to say, hey, let's offer this guy this giant amount of money. And I thought back to the Charlie Manuel firing press conference and how just like Matt Klentak, Ruben Amaro did not want to fire Charlie Manuel. Ruben Amaro cried at that press conference.
Yeah.
He cried at that press conference. Yeah. He did not want to tell him that. He did not want to tell Charlie Manuel, you know, that he, you know, they weren't renewing his contract, because I think he knew that he wouldn't want to continue on. And so I actually think the Phillies have always been managed in this top-down way, in this very specific top-down way. I just think we used to not know about it. I think John Middleton is being a lot more obvious about what he's doing because he really wants to be out front. He's excited to be out front. He loves that everybody wants to talk to him. He loves that he gets to act like he doesn't want to be talked to. I think he enjoys this whole experience of being able to tell everybody exactly what he thinks.
Yeah,
in a way that Montgomery did not need to. He did not need that validation from the press at all.
He's got that Steinbrenner gene in the back of his head, but he also knows that the difference between him and Steinbrenner is kind of obvious to everybody at the moment. So... You know, that's, you know, kind of waiting for that to happen. So the, the cocksure attitude can be deserved. But at the moment, you know, why is it? I mean, I honestly, one of the things, one of the quotes I wrote down was that Klentak talked about the culture and the development, and like all this has reignited my fascination with what it is a manager actually does. And I don't know if we'll ever have an answer to this question, because not only is it different everywhere, it's also just kind of a lot of it happens behind closed doors. The most valuable contributions a manager makes happen behind closed doors, and we will never know what those contributions might be. And that's what Klentak talked about. He talked about the leaps and bounds that culture and development had taken under Gabe Kapler. He said, stuff under the hood that people may not see, was how he put it. And he said that was the ways the Phillies have improved. And like, from one, that you know, that makes you, okay, that's kind of the way a manager operates person to person. But to fans, that's just a nothing answer. You know, like, yeah, there's a lot of stuff. We're fans. We're not going to see it. We're not going to be in that clubhouse. We probably don't want to know a lot of the stuff that goes on in there, but you know, saying we're better, you guys just don't know it, is exactly the problem this franchise has right now. Like, that attitude. And it comes out in every one of these press conferences. Like, no matter which one of these three guys is doing it, there's some form of, like, why do I have to be bothered with this? That comes with it. And it's just, it's so needless. You know, like, if they had come into this and just been like, you know, this is what we did, and just kind of like...
There was no humility to
all. Right, thank you. Humility. I was trying to figure out how to say eating S without you know, making John go back and edit it. But like, yeah, there was no humility to it. It was just like, what? You know?
We're here. What more do you want from us?
Obviously, there are questions. And, you know, this is exactly where you're going to be asked them. So, yeah, that component, I could lose that, you know, from this team. That's not making them any more appealing than they were last
Sincerity.
Year.
Sincerity. Is something that's missing. Like, mm-hmm. I mean, I feel like we felt that with Gabe too. Not that I believed he was insincere, but it always felt like he was very calculating in what he was saying. And there just doesn't seem to be any genuine feeling about anyone, for anyone, or anything coming from any of these people.
And that's what I've heard from a lot of people, from a lot of the, like, the beat writers and stuff like that off to the side, that this organization used to be an organization where that was like something that came through. Like, they cared about everybody and cared about people that they worked that worked for them. And that, I'm sure they still do to a degree, but it's not coming across that way at the moment. It's more robotic.
It's so disappointing. But I mean, it was inevitable. David Montgomery only had one life to live on this planet, and there's no one else like him from, you know, what everyone has said. And when he was gone, the organization was going to change. And it started changing from the moment he had to take a leave of absence, and we've just been hurtling towards these moments ever since, really.
Let me ask you guys something. So this was brought up a couple of times. McPhail probably said it in the best quote. He said, apparently this season is a month longer than we can play. Matt Klentak, there it is, said, you know, well, we haven't won in September. And like that's kind of what they were using as one of this team's specific problems.
The main reason, according to Middleton, you know, he couldn't get past why that would be and why that it wouldn't change.
So what is it that you guys think that a manager can do to correct that very specific problem, a manager who is not Gabe Kapler?
I think pacing the players a little bit more. Gabe Kapler managed every game like it was game 7 of the World Series. So I think that wore players down. I think all the information that they loaded up on players wore them down. So I think they are mentally exhausted by the time the latter part of the season rolls around. I think that's a lot of it. I think also too, knowing how to use your roster in September more appropriately is something that Gabe Kapler really struggled with. He had all these new toys to play with when the rosters expanded, and that won't be the case next year. But I think that factored into a little bit too. But I also think too is that when you have such a laissez-faire attitude, when you don't have a sense of urgency in April through August, and all of a sudden you're looking at September and you're like, and you know, now we've got to go on a blitz. Now we've got to play 600 baseball this month in order to make the playoffs. Now you put more pressure on yourself. Now you've whittled your season down to 1 month, and that can be a lot of pressure on a team with a lot of young players. You're really counting on a lot of young pitchers to come through for you. Those are my main ideas as to why that was happening.
Yeah, those are all really good.
I mean, I completely agree, but I also think that John Middleton really doesn't know. I think that the number of times he said, I just can't get past these September swoons, you know, that type of thing. The number of times he said it without putting anything else significant behind it or really anything else that really showed any other concrete reason why he wanted to fire him. I just don't think he knows. I think he just used that as an excuse to carry out the, you know, his desire to fire him, which he had way back in July.
Well, let's step away and take a quick break. When we come back, we'll talk a little bit more about the news conference. I have a couple other quotes that I wanted to run by you guys and get your thoughts, and we'll do some other stuff involving the news conference, a couple other questions to ask. We'll keep this rolling up next right here on Hittin' Season. And we're back on Hittin' Season. So I found that Glenn McNeil poll I mentioned earlier. He asked a simple question, and he had 3,161 votes. Did today's 57-minute news conference make you feel better about the Phillies? 95% said no. I want to talk to the 5% who said yes. How did you walk out of that news conference feeling better about where the Phillies? I mean, did maybe that you just hated Gabe Kapler that much? You feel better about the Phillies because Gabe's gone, and it didn't matter anything else that went down.
I fully believe those were accidental clicks.
They must have been. There's no way around it. But I got to say, I thought that was astonishing, 95%. I really thought that it would probably, you know, like 80-20. 95-5 with that many votes was something
else. Let's hope someone shows that to John Middleton, since he's so interested in the fan reaction and how the Phillies are perceived in Philadelphia.
And that is a fascinating aspect
because,
this. Like, how are they reacting to the reaction?
No, I mean, which is a ridiculous thing to think, but here we are in Inception. I would love to know, because they're either going to be, oh crap, look at what we did, or they're self-righteous. And they, you know, they're self-righteous and indignant, and they don't believe they did anything wrong, and they are frustrated at the press and at the fans for taking their completely reasonable 57-minute explanations as a sign that things are dysfunctional and weird.
Yeah. Well, let me run a couple other things by you here too. They talked a little bit about analytics, and I think this leadership group and with the Phillies doesn't understand the fan base. It's still amazing to me. You'd think John Middleton would, but I don't think he really understands what the fan base is all about, because they were talking about the use of analytics, and they were asked about it. It's not going anywhere. They've spent millions and billions of dollars on the analytics department here. And he said, was this Matt Klentak who said this? Yeah, Matt Klentak said, I think to be a forward-thinking organization, you have to be willing to take risks. And I think that's tougher in this market than it is just about anywhere else. I know that. But if we want to do what John has asked us to do, which is to continue to push forward and be a great organization and compete year in and year out with the Yankees and Dodgers and Astros, we have to be willing to continue to push the envelope at times. We will recognize the realities of our market, but we have to continue to push. This whole nonsense that Philadelphia hates analytics, they don't hate analytics when it comes to the Eagles. They don't hate analytics when it comes to the Sixers. And the reason is those teams know how to make it work. The problem here is not the city. It's that you guys have not figured out a way to make analytics work. You have not figured out people to put in place in order to make it work so that it actually results in wins on the field. But they're going to go about saying it's a challenge with everybody because we hate analytics. No, we don't. We hate losing. You know,
if the new movement in baseball was for every player to hold a ham sandwich in their hand while they were on the field, and the Phillies did that and won a World Series, nobody would give a crap how they did it. Like it does not matter. And honestly, that's one of the few, I don't believe this is actually a positive, but like one of the quotes that was like, oh, I didn't hate that moment was, I think it was Matt Klentak, but he said, it's not so much the data, but the delivery of the data that has to be thought through.
Yes.
Yeah, that's exactly. That's
We've
it.
Been saying that all year.
Is that not the problem you guys have, that you're not thinking about the delivery of the data? That it's just like the data is the data and the data is how we win. Praise the data. Everyone take a knee for the data. Like that's the impression everyone has about them. Like that wasn't it was like, yeah, that was, it's great to hear you say that. Why are we not doing that before?
Here's the thing. Explain to us how you're going to change it. That's what the people need to hear. And my big worry is they don't No, they kept talking about looking at how other teams are kind of using data, and like you can kind of look at what they do and see the results and kind of figure out exactly how they got
there.
Their
results are their results.
What are you guys talking about? You have a whole proprietary system that you've created here. I realize we started behind a lot of these other teams, but they don't look like they have figured out how to turn the damn machine on. That's the problem. Like, they don't know what half the buttons do.
One thing I want to point out is what Matt Gelb would not let go of in the press conference or in his article afterwards is that he tried to get them to he tried to get Klentak and Middleton and McPhail at any point to define what they meant by the realities or the limitations of this market. And at no point could he get them to define it. So I have no idea what they mean. You might be right, John, that it, you know, the impression is that we're not, you know, friendly to analytics, which is demonstrably untrue, considering that they hired a number of their analysts directly from the Phillies blogosphere. Like, they're aware that people in Philadelphia know and understand. They understand winning.
I can't say people would want to watch you do a math problem in Philadelphia, but I feel like that's not just a Philadelphia thing. And if you're using that math problem to win it at baseball, yeah, you know, people want to watch that. Absolutely.
No,
like
I'm sorry. I'm saying no team has tried to explain so much about their analytics and succeeded in explaining so little because most teams don't bother to do this type of thing with their fan. Like, they really should not have done this press conference at all. Like,
no.
You know what fans understand?
Well, they had to. They had to do a
but
news
not
conference.
In this
but
way.
I mean,
you know what they fans understand winning. And if you have to spend time explaining to them, you know, you guys don't like winning. You know, you guys don't like analytics because you don't understand. You know, you're unfriendly. And the issue really is that we're not winning and we don't want to hear you explain anymore about any of it. People don't care. Like, and I still don't. I just think whatever they're saying about the limitations and realities of the market is just pure crap that they're just saying because it's a phrase they could say to blame things on nothing. Because it's a meaningless statement because you're right, John. It's not, the analytics is not the issue.
No, it certainly wasn't the issue when Ruben Amaro was here and the entire city was crying for this team to get in the analytics game. So the city is not against analytics. They're against not understanding what the team's doing, and the team has not brought people along. I mean, they threw out a couple of stats during the news conference talking about they've added 17.8 WAR. They keep comparing themselves to 2015. Where, you know, what part
we
of
can
us
all
is
use
better?
FanGraphs, guys.
Yeah, that's just all we got. And I'm sure they use proprietary numbers that they don't want to share with us, and that's fine. I don't want them to. You don't need to tell me how the secret sauce is made. But you know, you're giving me we're better than we were in 2015. Well, no crap. If you were as bad as you were in 2015 all the time, what kind of a bar are we setting here? You know, they wanted to be this fastest rebuild, and the Cubs and the Astros, they're so far behind those teams. Stop. And I just what was also one of my big takeaways from this news conference was how they kept continuing to talk about the Astros and the Cubs and the Yankees and all these different teams. Stop comparing yourselves to these other teams. Figure out how you guys want to do this and
they're
do
not
it.
Ever going to be
they
those
have no,
teams.
No, they have no identity of their own. They don't seem to know what they want to do here, where they want to go. And now the problem is you don't know who's making the decisions. One of the other things Middleton said that I thought was really a slap to Matt Klentak was when he talked about, I'm not going to get involved in these decisions for like a 1-year reliever or $2 million. I don't even want to know what we're doing there. You know, like I'm the CEO. I'm going to get involved in the big stuff and make the big decisions. So we trust Matt Klentak to sign Jose Alvarez, but we don't trust Matt Klentak to make really important decisions. If I'm Matt Klentak, why am I still here?
Yeah, nothing to draw from that. Yeah, totally normal situation. You talk about analytics. Another thing that jumped out to me was Matt Klentak saying, I think it's hard to isolate. This was in regards to a question about players taking a step back in 2019. He said, I think it's hard to isolate at anyone. I think it's hard to isolate any one piece of performance and determine exactly why it happened. I might out myself as a particularly ignorant person by asking this question. is that not exactly what the analytics department is supposed to do? Like, I know not across the board. There's a lot of, I'm always saying there's a lot of X factors in baseball that you can't calculate. But, like, is that not exactly what that department is there to do, to provide a more specific view of why things are happening statistically?
I would say.
It's one of the things the analytics department is supposed to do. They're supposed to be, I mean, the way they are today are fairly large and full of people who do a lot of different things. The Astros have an enormous analytics department, and they do all sorts of stuff.
Like clapping.
Some of it might not be totally legal as far as the rules go, but they're doing it anyway.
Like clapping.
Yes, lots of clapping. You know, like, I think the Phillies still have a reasonably small analytics department as far as those teams go. Those departments are huge. So open up the wallet. Like, what is Andy Gaudley is the head of the analytics department. What is, why? Why is it still so small? Why, where, when are you going to hire more people who aren't just interns? Because they have interns every year. You know, they're hiring a few more people now, which is great. But in reality, to catch up with those teams, they need to double, if not triple, the size of their department. So John Middleton better open up his wallet if he really wants to catch up. If he wants to catch up, the time to start ramping up was like 2 years ago. And so right now, he needs to open up like another seven positions and get people moving.
One of the other things that I think we need to talk about before we take our last break here is that one of the, after the Howard Eskin question, he was basically asking, you know, how is the cupboard so bare here? You know, what is going on? And that's when Middleton made his, well, you know, I think Howard was implying about the bullpen and all that, you know, the lack of bullpen pieces and the starting rotation. And that's where Middleton fired off his fourth lowest bullpen ERA since the trade deadline. So we're using a two-month sample of the bullpen ERA.
I wonder
ERA.
Where he puts his trophy for that, if it's on his mantle.
I mean, forget about the fact the starting rotation was ass for the entire season and the offense underachieved in a lot of different ways.
Bullpen,
they talked about
John.
The bullpen, but the bullpen
fourth best.
And they talked about how basically none of the guys from that were here in 2018 played better in 2019. No explanation why that was. Just, you know, we had a lot of holdover problems. That's how they referred to it, a lot of holdover problems.
Oh man, I love that. And when
the
question was asked,
hey,
what do you mean by that? It was like, oh, you know, players who were there last year who carried over into this year. Yeah. What are the problems you're talking about? that's not the part I was asking about. Well,
but that's a good one.
And the idea that they didn't, like, that those were the only problems and not the spaces unfilled by guys they did not get to fill them? Like,
right. McPhail went on this whole thing about the farm system because Eskin was focusing on the drafts and stuff from 2016 on. So McPhail goes and starts talking about, well, we drafted three high school kids in 2016 and they take a long time. None of those guys look like they're going to be players right now. I mean, and they did give up some second and third round picks to sign some free agents. Guess what? So did a lot of the other really good teams. Where this team has struck out that these guys didn't address is international signings. They've gotten absolutely nothing. They were able to get JT Realmuto for Sixto Sanchez, but Sixto Sanchez was paid for from the previous regime, was one of the previous regime's international signings. These guys have not had an international signing hit. They get a lot of middle infielders that, you know, are like Cesar Hernandez, you know, Michael Franco, those type of guys who have kind of washed out and they're not going to be with the team moving forward. They're not going to be major pieces. They don't have any. They have a lot of young middle relievers like Edgar Garcia, who kind of flamed out, and Sir Anthony Dominguez, who knows what they're going to get out of him. They get a lot of those type of guys with their international signings, but they have yet to turn a star player around from an international signing like they, Juan Soto and Ronald Acuña and Gleyber Torres and a lot of these other young players that are out there. Jalen Ortiz was a guy they paid $4 million for 4 years ago, and I think it was in 2016. Guy's still struggling at single-A Clearwater. They don't have any of these types. But that wasn't, you know, that wasn't part of the equation here. So that's another area where this team has to do a lot better, and I don't know that they have an answer for how they're going to get better at that.
Didn't they cite that the fact that they have, what, three prospects?
Three
in the top
100 prospects. Three. Like, that's a lot.
Like, that's a brag. Oh,
there are 100 on there, and there are 30 teams. The Dodgers, who have been good every year for, like, the last six, 7 years, They have a top-rated farm system, and that's largely because of their international signings, but they also draft really smartly. The Cubs still have a decently stocked farm system somehow. Like, the Yankees still have a top-rated farm system, and everyone you see on the field is homegrown in some shape or form. Like, the Phillies, yeah. We look at these teams and how they're good now, and I feel like you have to take a lens and kind of move back when you look at where the Phillies have to go and how long it's going to take them to get there. They don't have a Juan Soto or a Ronald Acuna. They have to buy almost every single thing they need. They have to buy or trade every single thing they need. And you look at all the other teams and why they have extra resources to do stuff like that. It's because they have Aaron Judge. They have Gleyber Torres. They have Didi Gregorius.
Gary Sanchez.
You look at these teams and they're stocked with young talent, which the Phillies have, strictly speaking, none of.
No.
That's something that needs to be addressed. And it's bonkers that they started comparing themselves to these big teams without recognizing the deficiencies that clearly need to be fixed.
Yeah. They're in the lower third in farm systems in baseball. So don't give me this three top 100 prospects. Their whole farm system is in the lower. And they may value it more highly than prospect experts, but if you're going to use MLB Pipeline as your tool to promote your farm system, then you've got to look at the overall team rankings that these same people use. And you're going to be in the bottom third going into 2020. Let's take our last quick break, and we'll finish up with all this. We'll do some winners and losers from the news conference. And I think what we're going to come back with is I have one particular columnist who wrote something that I want to share. And if you guys have anything from a beat reporter or a columnist that you want to share, we'll do that too. That's up next right here on Hittin' Season. And we're back on Hittin' Season. So before we get to our winners and losers from this news conference, let me just, I want to read to you what I thought was really good from Jack McCaffrey at the Delaware County Daily Times talking about the news conference. There's two brief bits here, two paragraphs I wanted to read. He said, talking about John Middleton, to his right, looking as terrified as if he'd had just seen Vince Velasquez walk to the mound to pitch a sixth inning, there was Matt Klentak. To his left, looking like he was waiting out a lengthy rain delay just because he had nowhere else to go, there was Andy McPhail. And in one of those press briefings destined to become a remember-when reference point, think an Allen Iverson talking about practice moment, everything was revealed about how the Phillies operate. Later on, he said, the only problem Friday was that in so openly flexing, while literally seated at the same table, Middleton publicly made his general manager and his president appear useless. That McPhail literally would share that he and Klentak had doubts that Kapler should be fired only underlined that the Phillies are a one-man operation when that one man decides they should be a one-man operation. And that, frankly, to me, is the main takeaway from this news conference is if they really wanted to look like they had their act together, even if they had disagreements about Gabe Kapler, they should have come out as a unified front. Like, how do you come out and say, yeah, the general manager we hired to make these decisions disagreed, but I overruled him? Like, that
why,
is...
Why was that okay to say?
How do you think that's good for you?
Yeah.
So, yep. I think that is more than anything else. It was just like a total... That was a total John Middleton ego thing. These guys didn't want to do it. I wanted to do it. I made the decision. Now we're moving forward. But at the same, but in doing that, he chopped the knees off his general manager and team president. So.
Yeah, but look how much time and effort he put into. He flew around.
Yeah, he did
and
fly
had a
around
bunch
a lot.
Of in-person conversations and stretched the process out for a week. So,
and there still was no real good explanation for why it took so long, why that all needed to happen.
Well, but, jets run out of fuel, John.
Restaurants need to be eaten at. Expense reports need to be filled out, John.
Very true. Very true. All right. So let's do you guys have any let's talk about some winners and losers from this news conference. Why don't you guys each give me a winner, a big winner from this news conference? Liz, let me start with you.
My winner is Gabe Kapler for escaping this spider's web of incompetence that he had fallen into. As we've said, we still don't necessarily believe that he was the right fit for this team at this time. You know, maybe if the Phillies had been a little further along, he would have been a better fit and we wouldn't have noticed him as much. But we expected so much of him so quickly that there is no way it was going to work. But he is out clean and has a chance to start fresh with the Giants. And like I said, I wish him the best of luck and I hope it goes well, because that is the that's the best FU you can give your former employer who fired you, is having insane success, or at least not failure at your next job.
With the Giants, no less. Can you imagine?
I was just thinking about when the Phillies...
We live in hell.
I was just thinking when the Phillies and the Giants visit, if he's managing them, you know what the big headline is going to be? The big question everyone's going to ask?
Wow.
Will the Phillies fans boo him? Yes, they will immediately, loudly and forever.
Absolutely.
No one is going to appreciate anything that he did here, because to everyone outward, it didn't seem like he did very much.
He does look a lot more sympathetic right now than he did earlier in the week when everybody was wondering whether or not he was going to be fired. Justin, it really has. That news conference was something else. A winner for you, Justin, from the news conference.
Big winner. Big winner. Craig Counsell.
Oh, yeah.
Huge, hugely complimentary. Craig Counsell, I'm watching that. Why would I be? But if I am... Huge ego trip following this. Wow, these other people I've never even I've talked to are just give me the biggest, wettest tongue bath ever in a press conference that has nothing to do with me. This is awesome. What a great day to be Craig.
Should I ask for a raise? You think my boss is going
to... Yeah, can I get a raise
How
from the
good
Brewers?
Of a job?
From...
Man, I just lost the wild card game and I couldn't feel better.
I mean, the Phillies
Listen,
would hire me right now if I wanted.
Yeah, I was going to say, you guys understand that I could literally walk out the door right now and go work for this team, right? Yeah.
Contract's up in 2020. That checked.
Oh boy.
Yeah, they're not letting him go.
So maybe you just signed Dusty Wathan this year to be your manager, so you can go get Craig Counsell next year.
So you can pull
up
Pete McCannon and fire him.
Yeah. Bring Pete back for 1 year to say, hey, Pete, listen, we're going to need you to hold that place
again. Why
don't
we just
and then
have...
sit in front of the press and say, we believe Pete is the man for the future of this job, whatever we decide the future is.
This is my idea. I think Larry Boa, Charlie Manuel, and Pete McCannon should manage together as a three-headed manager monster.
I like
Am
that.
Am I the only one? Is this not the greatest idea you've ever heard?
Man, I was advocating for John Kruk to manage this team a couple of years ago. I'm down for anything.
It's like the movie Space Cowboys, only
on
in
Earth
baseball.
And
you know,
not any of that.
Tommy Lee Jones. Yeah, right. For me, the big winner was the Phillies beat reporters. I mean, they were in their element, as not only asking great questions, but writing with a passion. You don't often get the Philly beat writers to get their opinions in a lot of their writing, but it just couldn't help themselves this time around, and we needed it. You know, it was really good. Every time I wrote something, it was man, that's exactly what I was thinking. You know, it's just, they crystallized the problems and really, really hammered down on them. And I thought they did. I thought they had a tremendous day on Friday, and in the day after with the stuff that they wrote. And the columnists had so much material to work with. It was a good day for the Phillies beat writers on Friday with that news conference. I thought losers, obviously losers of this news conference. They were legion, but if you had to pick out one big loser, Liz, who would you pick?
This feels like a better note to end on, but I feel like the fans are the real losers here. The fans had to listen to all this and try and convince themselves that another year of Phillies is worth spending their time and money on. And it will be, for the most part. You know, we'll be there, but because we're fans and we're pathological. This is what we do. But I don't know if it will be that worth it, because... we've saw a lot of dysfunction on display, and we know now that that is behind whatever we see on the field. You know, Andy McPhail mentioned a number of times attendance is up and their television ratings went up by 21%. Because people are excited to see, you know, Bryce Harper. And that's true, but that bump isn't going to last forever. They're going to have to win, and the fans aren't going to wait around to see it.
Justin, loser, the big loser for you from the news conference, or a big loser from you for the news conference?
I don't think that Bryce Harper is as miserable as fans of a certain playoff team would like to think he is. But it is interesting to think about the position of a man who signed away the next 13 years of his life to the organization that put on that press conference. Well, the team he wanted, the team he originally wanted to go play for, the team he had been playing for, is probably going to win the World Series. So I don't want to. I'm not going to call Bryce Harper a loser because he's a millionaire many times over with a new baby and a wonderful life. But you know, it, a man in that position, it's hard not to feel like he might be just thinking about that at some point. Yeah.
For me, I think a big loser from this news conference is us, this podcast, because it was fun to do this podcast tonight, but I was hoping that we would have some playoff baseball to talk about in the near future with this baseball team, you know.
So, and this will be our last.
This is
signing
off. We're gonna pull a Shepard Smith from Fox News all of a sudden and throw a surprise resignation at you. I'm being sarcastic. Obviously, we're not going anywhere, and we're gonna have a lot of fun talking about this team no matter what. But you know, it feels like we're further away from this team being in the playoffs than we were even at the end of 2017 when they removed Pete Maccannon, and it felt like the team was really on the verge of moving forward with a lot of really good young talent.
It also, I'm sorry, John.
No, that's okay. I was just going to say, you know, I'm just thinking back to what that, the end of the 2017 season when they went 35-36, but they had just called up J.P. Crawford, and they had called up Nick Williams, and he'd played well, and they had Aaron Altherr, and Rhys Hoskins went on his home run streak, and, you know, you still had Scott Kingery tearing it up in AAA. Roman Quinn looked like he was going to be a good player. You had all these young homegrown players. It felt like you were really building towards something, and you had, like, no financial commitment in front of you. Now you look at all those young players, and most of them are not going to be here next year. The young players that you do have all took big steps back in 2019, and you just don't know what things are, and you don't know who's leading the team moving forward. You don't know who's making the decisions. This team, in the worst way, needs a manager like Showalter, like Dusty Baker, like Joe Girardi to take control of things and give this team some direction. Because right now, this Phillies franchise does not have direction. They have a leader in John Middleton, but he's not a baseball ops guy. And the baseball ops guys they have, it really feels like their days are numbered. I mean, the only reason I think, this is my theory, the only reason why Matt Klentak didn't get fired is because they just signed him to a 3-year extension.
I think that has a lot to do with things. Almost feels like in John Middleton's mind, firing Kapler but not firing Klentak was like the sort of half measure that wasn't quite cleaning house. It was just like a half step that he could do that was like, I did something dramatic, but I didn't do everything and overplay my hand. He didn't really think about what this means and more importantly, what it doesn't mean, I think.
Do either of you recall when he signed them to that extension, when he signed Klentak to that extension?
Klentak was this offseason. I think it was just after, it was either just before or just after the Bryce Harper sign.
That was my question, because I, for some reason, thought it was sometime during the year. I had a memory of it being in July, and I thought, what?
I think that's when it came out. That's when it got announced and came out. Yeah, that's when MacGill reported it. But McPhail's was last year, I think. For Klentak, it was after this offseason.
That was my question, because I thought, wow, what a stupid thing to have questions about the manager that your GM just hired while giving that said GM an extension for 3 years to work for this organization. I'm glad that that didn't happen, at least.
John, you said you felt like this team is now far away from playoff contention. I honestly feel after everything that's happened, and now after this, I guess specifically, I kind of feel just far away from the Phillies in general. Mm-hmm. And we're talking about a lack of identity, a lack of leadership, and like all that stuff contributes to the just this feeling of overall like, yeah, I mean, like, we're fans of this team. That's why we do this. But like, I don't know them. I don't know what's going on. I don't know what they're trying to do other than, like, you know, the overall goal of winning games, but like how they're going about that. And like, I don't feel like this, don't know this team, you know, and they just really haven't done a good job of talking to people and communicating and explaining,
making us feel a part of it.
Right. And if that's like, you know, I it feels silly to say that. 'Cause like, yeah, at the end of the day, we're not like really a part of what goes on inside the Phillies organization, but like, we're pretty much the only thing going on outside of it. So you got to make a little bit more of an effort not to seem utterly disgusted or annoyed by what's going on outside your office, Matt Klentak. Sorry.
No, I think that's fine, but I think Matt Klentak's got bigger fish to fry at this point. He's on the hot seat, and he's got a manager to go get approval for this offseason.
He's got some reports to fill out. He has to refill the office coffee bin. He's got a lot to do.
Well, we're going to have a lot to talk about this offseason because they are going to be active. We did hear that at the news conference that they are planning on being active. They're not going to go over the luxury tax for a second wild card, but I don't know that that necessarily means they're not going to go after big fish this offseason. It sounds like
they
are.
Yeah, what if they have to play the Dodgers in the playoffs? Those unbeatable Dodgers.
But
going after the wild card is the same as going after a playoff spot, idiots.
But we'll continue to keep track of what these guys are doing. I mean, they're obviously we can put the news conference behind us a bit, and we'll see how this dynamic shakes out this offseason. It certainly is going to be an interesting one. But that'll do it for episode number 328 of Hittin' Season. My thanks to Justin and Liz once again for coming on here on a Sunday night and breaking this whole thing down. Just a reminder, folks, if you haven't checked out the Hittin' Season Patreon, please make sure you go do that at patreon.com/hittin'season. And tell a friend about the Phillies podcast, The Good Fight. Go tell them about Hittin' Season, Continued Success, and The Dirty Inning. Have them subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or Spotify, wherever it is they get their podcasts. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in. We'll talk to you next time right here on Hittin' Season.